You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, broadcasting live from Nelson Mandela University.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against death domination. I have carried the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an idea which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if need be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
Nelson Mandela University, change the world. Changing the world, one voice at a time.
Welcome to The Law Show. I'm your host, Katlego Mofokeng, also known as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. But here behind the mic, I'm more than that. I'm your legal compass, your storyteller, and your sister in the struggle. This episode is for the brave, the defiant, the ones who dare to remember. Because memory is resistance. Today we go deep into the legacy of the youth in South Africa. From the streets of Soweto in 1976 to the courtroom of Gqeberha in 2025, where the Craddock 4 inquest is unfolding, finally confronting the ghosts of apartheid violence. This show is a tribute, a reckoning, a reminder. We remember the students who picked up stones and books and made the world take notice. We remember Fort Kalata, Matthew Koniwe, Sparrow Mkhonto, and Sicelo Mhlaole, four men who believed in the power of youth, education, and justice, and who were brutally murdered for it. We remember, not for nostalgia, but for strategy, because young people have always been the fire. And if you've ever wondered whether your voice mattered, your voice does. And this episode is your answer. So let's begin. The Soweto uprising of June 16, 1976 changed everything. Thousands of students, most just teenagers, filled the streets of Soweto the winter morning of 1976, and they were met with bullets. It was about dignity, about saying, we refuse to be taught in the language of our oppressors. We refuse to be tools in a system that sees us as less than human. Young people just like me and you, forced to look at the many dangers they face. And they forced the world to look at South Africa and those dangers. They exposed the violence of Bantu education. They reminded the country that revolution does not wait for adulthood. And many paid with their lives. Hector Peterson was just 12 years old. His death became an icon, not just of tragedy, but of courage. That day wasn't the end, though. It was the spark. The youth of 76 paved the way for the youth of the 80s. They inspired the Craddock 4, the student boycotts, the UDF, COSAS, and township resistance. They showed us that agency isn't about power handed down, it's about power taken up. And now the baton is in our hands. Fast forward to today. We live in a democratic South Africa. We vote, we speak, we study, but let's be honest, freedom isn't free when you're jobless, voiceless, or disillusioned. And according to the Development Bank of Southern Africa, youth employment is over 60%. That's not a statistic. That's someone you know. A cousin with a degree but no job, a friend with dreams but no capital, a peer with passion but no platform. From mental health struggles to substance abuse, from crime to poverty, our generation faces a complex and often frustrating system. But we are not helpless. Look around. We've shut down universities to demand access. We've taken to the streets for GBV, for Palestine, for Cwe Cwe, for food insecurity. We've built online platforms, student radios, TikTok movements, and community organizations. We've marched and voted. We even sued the government. Why? Because the youth are watching. And they are rising. This generation, your generation, stands on the shoulders of giants. But giants don't stand still. They move, they build, they disrupt. And yes, it's hard. Sometimes, oh, we feel unheard, disrespected, manipulated by corrupt leaders or empty promises. And sometimes it feels like the system is too broken. But listen closely. The system is afraid. Because an organized youth, a mobilized youth, that's unstoppable. Whether you're studying law, teaching kids, writing poems, coding, DJing, or growing veggies in your backyard, you're part of a movement. History tells us that real change doesn't start in parliament. It starts in places like classrooms and cafeterias and campuses. And so, we are the next wave of leaders. Not in some distant future, but right now. And ultimately, the question we have to ask is, what are you organizing for? Because the world is waiting. June 16 is more than a holiday. It's a reminder that the youth can lead revolutions because we already have. Now, I would like to read to you a poem titled The Manifesto of the Excluded. I am not a martyr. I am simply down on bended knee because what I have to offer is a prayer, a plea. May it all end with me. May I be the barrier that prevents this injustice from moving forward. May I provide answers to prayers we thought we buried with old leaders. Their ghosts haunt the democracy we've inscribed into wooden panels we've used to open this nation's supremacy. May it all end with me. Beat the drum. Command their spirits forth. Tap feet to ground in tranced rhythm. Offer them an altar. Affirm them in murmured lyric. In their presence we implore in chronology one. Bring forth the women from the outskirts of the room two. Concentrate the voices of the youth in popular assembly three. Restore the dignity of our forefathers four. Unearth their injustices and meet them with revolutionary authenticity five. Walk us past this threshold into freedom six. Steve Bantu Biko lay shackled on the top floor, the sixth floor of the Sanlam building. Six, his conviction unwavering, he met his demise. Six, I reside on the top floor, behind the sixth door, the last door. My conviction unwavering. Six, may it all end with me. I think it's important that we know what our mission is in this generation. I think it's important that we realize that the chronology of these things is what's important in modern day South Africa. And unfortunately, even then, during 1976, 1948, during those times, this was just as important as it was. We needed women to be brought from the outskirts of the room, and look at what they did. Look at how far they've come. And that's why in August we celebrate them. This month belongs to the youth. And although we do not concentrate their voices oftentimes in parliament, we hear them. And that's important. It's a reminder of the fact that we are still here, and yes, we are still pushing. But we're going to get there. Sooner rather than later, we're going to get there. And all it takes is our voices, us using our agency to actually bring about change. Now we're going to turn away from the youth for a minute and look at a small town called Craddock in the heart of Eastern Cape. The kind of place where people know your name, your family, your story. But that changed. June 27, 1985. Is the date of importance to you? Think back. I think a lot of you weren't born at that time. But have you heard of that specific date? Have you been reminded of that date? Do you know what happened in our history on that specific date? While Cradock's name was forever carved in the nation's memory, not for its beauty, but for its blood. Today we tell the story of four brave men. Matthew Koniwe, Fort Galata, Stelom Hlauli, and Sparrow Mkhonto, now etched into South Africa's history as the Cradock Four. I think we're just now, a lot of us are just now hearing about the Cradock Four. Those of you who studied history somewhat might have heard of them. And it's a very gruesome story. And unfortunately, it's not just a fairy tale story. It's actually the truth of what it looked like to live in apartheid South Africa. They weren't politicians. They weren't soldiers. They were teachers, fathers, and freedom fighters. Ordinary men doing extraordinary things in their community during an extraordinary time of struggle. And for that, for daring to organize, to resist, to hope, they were murdered by the apartheid state. But this isn't just a story of what happened in 1985. It's a story about what hasn't happened since. It's been nearly 40 years since they were abducted, tortured, and killed. Their bodies were found burned and mutilated on the side of the road near PE. And although everyone knew who was responsible, members of the South African security branch, no one was held accountable. First came silence. Then came the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, meant to uncover what the old regime tried to bury. The TRC gave families like the Galatas and the Koniwes a platform. Their pain was finally heard. But truth is not justice, and forgiveness without accountability isn't healing. That's erasure. In June 2025, just last week, a new inquest into the Cradock Four was opened in the Gqeberha High Court. It's been almost four decades, so I'm sure you're asking, why now? Because their families never stopped fighting. Because their children, who are now grown, now parents themselves, carry the weight of unanswered questions. Lukhanyo Qalata, Fort Qalata's son, became a journalist. He says he spent his whole life searching for a father the state stole and for a justice the state denied. I'm going to repeat that. He says he spent his whole life searching for a father the state stole and for a justice the state denied. Now, he and 24 other families have now taken the government to court. They are demanding 160 million rand in constitutional damages, not just for the loss of life, but for the decades of delay and deliberate suppression of prosecutions after the TRC. In 1996, when the TRC began, there was hope. South Africa was blooming with a new constitution, and Nelson Mandela's Rainbow Nation promised accountability. The TRC told the country, if you tell the truth and if your crimes were politically motivated, you could be granted amnesty. But the killers of the Cradock Four, men like Eric Taylor, Harold Snyman, and others, were denied amnesty. They had refused full disclosure. So why weren't they prosecuted? Well, it's because the political will collapsed. Behind the scenes, state prosecutors and top ANC officials stalled dozens of apartheid-era cases. A dirty deal, perhaps. Reconciliation traded for silence. What does that say to us as the youth? Does it say that the justice system moves only when it's convenient, that time heals old wounds, but only if no one reopens them? I think it tells us that justice is a struggle that doesn't end with democracy. It tells us that even in a constitutional state, you must demand justice again and again until someone listens. And someone is listening now. In the current inquest, testimony was heard from Fort Galata's widow, Nomonde. And as she recounted the brutality of her husband's murder, she broke down in court. No one in that courtroom remained unmoved. the state prosecutor stated plainly. This isn't a rogue act. It was a calculated and premeditated murder by state officials, authorized, sanctioned, and concealed. This new inquest isn't a legal proceeding. It's a moral reckoning. And so here we are, university students born after apartheid, standing in the aftermath of unfinished business. The question is, what do we do with this knowledge? We keep asking, we keep learning, and we keep showing up, even when it's hard. I think last week we were speaking about gender-based violence, intimate partner violence, and the femicide happening in South Africa. And I think oftentimes it's so easy to be apathetic to what's happening around us because we're growing numb to the injustices that continue to plague the country, from government corruption to landlessness to the invisible oppression that finds itself in different systems. And now to realizing the fact that some questions may never ever be answered in our lifetime. It's a scary thought, a hard one to reckon with, and it's something that I fear may quite literally cause a standstill with regards to activism and advocacy in the youth. When you realize that your voice is not being heard, when you realize that your cries aren't being heard and there are still these injustices prevailing over and over, you ask yourself, what is the point of me standing up against that? What is the point of me saying, this is messed up and this needs to stop when there is no stopping? And I need us to look at all of the people right now that are fighting for Palestinians. People who are showing up, be it by land or by sea or even by air, listen and see what's going on out there. People are still fighting. Even though the Gaza Strip looks like a decaying heap of buildings burnt down to the ground, even then, we understand that it's our responsibility to stand up, to advocate for people who are currently unable to do that, to help them, to provide aid in times when they themselves are not able to give it to themselves. It's our turn now to show up for other people. So in as much as it is a very tiring task, and it's grueling, and it requires quite a lot from you as a human being, show up every day. And showing up every day looks different. It looks different. Some days it may look like just showing up and being quiet and sitting there and hearing the messes from the masses. But it involves showing up. And I think we need to learn that. We need to learn to be consistent in the ways in which we show up for other people and for ourselves. Because these kinds of problems that we're facing in South Africa are not just going to disappear one day with a magic wand. We need to start questioning, we need to start learning, but we also need to disrupt, especially a system that thrives on oppression, on silence. A system that thrives on you not doing anything about it is a system that needs to be disrupted by you doing something about it, however that looks. However, whichever way you choose to show up, show up. Set your best foot forward. That's the best I can say. That's honestly the only way we can go about things. And I understand. I myself sometimes find myself just wondering if it really is all worth it. But I realize the fact that I have been given the gift of the gab. Being able to speak out. Being able to speak to you. Listener at home. That's my way of showing up, of advocating for people, bringing people together, having them sit down, speak on the issues, and then implementing whatever is said in those kind of rooms. That's my way of showing up. What's yours? Let me know what your way of showing up is, because then ultimately I can support you and you can support me. How you support me is by listening, taking what I say, and using it in your everyday life. How I show up for you is by listening to you, understanding what it is that you have to say, and working alongside others to make sure that whatever it is that you feel needs to be done in whatever area you feel needs activism or advocacy, we'll show up. We've got you. Because here at Madiba's Radio, we connect, we inform, and we engage. And engagement, how we engage with you, how we sit alongside you in some of the darkest moments of your life, that changes the world. So, I am not a one-woman revolution. I have many that stand alongside me and behind me. And I believe that if you stand beside me, then I got you. That we can move along this world and make a significant change. And the only way to do it is by speaking up. However which way that looks. It could be with poetry. It could be in music. Debating. Legislation. Every other thing that you can think of. Show up. It is unfortunate, yes, that many have had to lose their lives when they decided to show up. But the only way to be able to do that, to make a change, to make sure that no other bodies drop in the name of making a change, is for us also to show up in those times. Times have changed. Bathi walala wasala wavuka walimala. And that's okay, we have first aid. We have a first aid kit, don't worry. We got you, we've got your bag. Now, we need to understand this is more about the Cradock 4. This is about all the lives lost in the dark corners of history. In places like Mamelodi, Soweto, Matatiele. It's about whether the law is only for the powerful or whether the Constitution itself, this big document, you know, that we study and defend and dream through, what it means for everyone. There's been news of the fact that there've been 60, over 60, I think, 6,600 pleas for changes to the Constitution. And it begs the question, what exactly is the Constitution doing wrong that makes people want to change it so much? Where is the problem? Because we have a Bill of Rights and the like, you know, we have limitations to some of those rights, but others do not have limitations to them. And we were kind of grappling with the fact that maybe our constitution needs to change in the face of what currently is South Africa. And other times it might not just be the constitution, it might be legislation that is put in place or was put in place at a time where it served the people of that time, but no longer serves us right now. So what no longer serves us in our constitution? What no longer serves us in legislation? That's important. Read your laws, understand it. I think it's something way more than just hearing the gist of something. Oftentimes you'll hear people talk about the Poppy Act. It's such an interesting thing. People will talk about the Poppy Act, né? And then you'll ask them, okay, fine, what are the intricacies of the Poppy Act? Like, what exactly does it say? And some people cannot really answer that. And it's mainly because of the fact that it's information that we get, yes, in social settings, but it's not information we interrogate. And I think we need to learn that as a people, to interrogate oftentimes the thoughts of just the people that are around us. I have heard many an example of, you know, the one guy, Ekasi. If you're from the hood, you'll understand this. Ekasi, there's that one guy who's Mr. Know-it-all that just sits there and it just says, ah, kao, mina, it's ichele kuthi kuyenzakala ne, fede. And then they start telling you like a bunch of things. And oftentimes people just listen to this person, but they don't question it. They don't interrogate the facts this person is bringing forth. We need to be those people. We need to be able to ask, like, okay, Ntwana, nyakuzone, mara fere, this one part of what you're saying doesn't sound right. Where did you get this information from? And you'll see some of that information is literally just gotten by the source. Trust me, bro. Like, Ntembe, I promise I'm right. And that's not the way in which we need to live our lives. Ask, interrogate, even interrogate me too, please. engage in the sense of asking me if what I'm saying is right, interrogating some of the things that I say, if not even some, all of them. Be willing to engage with the information that you are being given so that you make informed decisions. And informed decisions need to be made on information that is correct, that is accurate to the situation you are facing. Understand that. And you need to exercise your agency in whichever room, whatever platform you are given. That is the only way for you as the youth to be able to take up arms, whatever that looks like, and make a change. Turn the world on its head. And I promise you, you will see exactly the change that you want to see happen. Angel Ludlow, Michael Jackson, Ari, heal the world, make it a better place. For me and for you, exactly. Do that thing. Be a part of the change. You are a part of a movement. Whether or not whether you like it or not, everything is political in the world. Your life that you're leading, the taxi fare that you have, it's political. It's affected by many other factors. So you are part of a movement. You're part of politics. You're part of the socio-economic hub of South Africa. So take part. Show up. Ultimately, show up. Now, as we end today's show, we honor Matthew, Ford, Stello, and Sparrow. Not as martyrs, but as men. As sons, husbands, fathers, teachers. As leaders whose lives mattered. We also honor the families still fighting. You remind us that truth without justice is a headline. And that history is not a place we visit. It's a place we live in. This has been The Law Show on Madiba's Radio. I am Katlego Mofokeng. Stay informed. Stay critical. Stay compassionate. And remember, justice is not a moment. It's a movement. So take part in the movement. Show up.
The best youth station in the Bay. Madiba's Radio.
It is that time again. Welcome to Science Package here on Madiba's Radio podcast. As you always say, we want to connect, inform, and engage. Because Madiba's Radio, we are moving to other levels. We're on podcast. Listen, we're going to the next level. Of course, to introduce myself, my name is Tsoke Telondlovu, the brightest star on podcast. Once you hear things on your airwaves, nothing will ever be the same. And of course, we've got so much to cover because on Science Package, we like to cover all things STEM. So STEM being science, technology, engineering, mathematics, anything in those lines, we're going to cover it. We're going to discuss it, and we're just gonna have a good time with it. But of course, the headlines for today, we're firstly speaking about dragonflies and why they're important for freshwater ecosystem conservation. And then after that, we'll be going into gender equality in the South African logistics sector. And then lastly, we'll be speaking about Total Energies, because listen, Total Energies is being sued. Imagine. It's spicy, it's controversial, but we'll be getting into it. And after that, we'll have our science facts just to do some little cute, find out a few fun facts for the day. And then we'll be having our science word of the day. So it's quite an interesting conversation. But let's get straight into it because we need to discuss a cute little insect that just be shining like the shining star that it is. Dragonflies. Now, although, you know, they light up, they glow, they just little cute little things by water, and you're just like, oh, this nunu. Like, they are actually very important because they're very crucial indicators of the health of our freshwater environments. Now, researchers were like, we need to discover more about these insects. So they conducted a recent assessment by a team of international dragonfly experts, including notable scientists from Stellenbosch's University's Department of Conservation, Ecology and Entomology, and they've issued a call for the enhanced incorporation of dragonflies into global biodiversity conservation efforts. Okay, Stellenbosch, we see you making waves. We see you considering how, like, Cape Town not even Cape Town, Western Cape as a whole province has a lot of fresh water environment. I mean, South Africa, we just be having so many fresh water environments. So it's quite interesting how one university decided, let's actually investigate because we need to get down to the business of dragonflies. Now, their findings highlighted an urgent need for a structured and targeted approach to preserve these irreplaceable insects, which indicate the health of these aquatic environments. Because without the aquatic environments, what is the world, basically? The water is important, and the creatures that live in the water are even more important. Now, in their comprehensive review published in the journal Insect Conservation and Diversity. So if you want to find out more about insects, you can go and read that review. Now, researchers outlined a 5-point action plan aimed at elevating the role of dragonflies in the conservation initiatives. Now, let's actually dissect what is in this 5-point plan, because I actually like the fact that it's not even just it's one plan and we're gonna roll with it. It's 5 plans. They locked in, Shem. Now, the first thing they're about to do is enhanced monitoring, where they're gonna implement robust protocols to track dragonfly populations and their habitats. So they're gonna be like, listen, where are the dragonflies at? What are they doing? How are they behaving? And what contributions are they making? So we're kind of, you know, stalking them a bit, you know, stalking the dragonflies. Listen, I feel like this is a good day to be a dragonfly. Imagine getting all this attention, like, since when? And then secondly, risk assessments, including dragonflies in environmental toxicological evaluations to gauge ecosystem health. Not only are we stalking them, but we're also going to see, okay, how are they contributing to the freshwater system? Is the contribution good? I mean, of course it is good. I mean, they are dragonflies and they continue slaying, but we also got to know how much good are they contributing to the ecosystem, and how can the overall ecosystem become even better? Thirdly, we're going to have landscape conservation, where we're going to leverage insights from dragonfly biology to inform broader conservation efforts. Now that we know about what dragonflies are doing and how they're contributing and what do they need, how is we as human beings can contribute to that? Because at the end of the day, because human beings, we are people that we have such advanced knowledge of everything when it comes to science and just life. So I feel like the best way that we can contribute to other animals and to the environment is utilizing all the information and all the things that we can do and making the world a better place. And what better way to start than making the world a better place for the dragonflies? Like, come on now, we love this. The fourth one is integrated initiatives, where we'll be aligning dragonfly conservation with other biodiversity projects. Because listen, dragonflies are not the only animals that are having these projects. So many other animals, including us as human beings, like, we also need some sort of biodiversity conservation project, because listen, a lot is going down on Earth. So to include dragonflies in all these other projects is essential, because as you always say in the circular life, everything flows, everything affects everything else. So if the dragonflies aren't doing what they need to do, then it's going to cause a lot of problems for not only the environment, but other animals and the world as a whole. Who knows? Maybe the climate might even rain. Like, it might affect rain. It might affect sunlight. Like, it might just cause chaos. We don't know. And we don't want to risk that. Hence why we need to really focus in on the dragonflies, which leads us to our last point. Educational outreach. And this is the promoting of awareness of the dragonflies and their importance, especially in the educational sector. Because when you really think about it, not a lot of people know much about dragonflies, because it's like, okay, they fly around water, what else type of thing. So I do feel like having education, more education on dragonflies and their environment, as well as their impact on the environment, maybe even on us as human beings, finding more about that is really going to help in the whole broader scheme of saving the dragonflies. I feel like that should be the hashtag. Hashtag save the dragonflies. It needs to trend everywhere. Now, although this 5-point action plan seems like, no, it eats. It could lock in. It could really work. It does have a bit of challenges. Now, dragonflies do face a lot of threats. This could include habitation loss, pollution, invasive species, and the big, 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 big one, climate change. Mm-hmm. One thing about climate change, it's a problem. It's such a problem. And it just affects everything because overall, climate change is really destroying our planet. So how can the dragonflies live if there's no planet to begin with? So at the end of the day, climate change is a problem that needs to be dealt with first, I feel, because everything is going to be affected if there's no planet. So climate change, we need to lock in on that. But as a listener or as a friend or wherever you're listening from, if you want to find out, how can I help save the dragonflies? I mean, firstly, you can make them trend on TikTok. Who knows? I mean, that could work too. But for more practical solutions, firstly, you can observe them and report on them. So if you know any, like, freshwater systems and freshwater places around your neighborhood, whether it's a pond, a river, an ocean, a lake. If you know that you are next to a freshwater place, you can go there and monitor the dragonflies and really also even initiate some projects for it because, hey, maybe they are, you might find out there are some in the city or maybe they're not. But I do feel like if there isn't, hey, you could be the first one and you could be revolutionary. Who knows? You could be the savior of dragonflies. I mean, if you are, you know, invite me to the conference, invite me to the event. But of course, from observing them, you can also now establish dragonfly-friendly spaces by maintaining clean ponds and planting native vegetation. Because in as much as there may be freshwater places around the city and around South Africa, are they really maintained? Because as you said, pollution is a big problem, you know. Just now you find the dragonflies and then now the pond that they're in and like around is now dirty. There's pollution, there's stank, there's fires. You know, a lot is going on. And I'm pretty sure the dragonflies are like, what's going on? Like, my home is destroyed. We don't want that for them because if we put ourselves in their position, like, imagine you're just trying to live a beautiful life and then now, hey, there's a lot going on now. There's plants growing in your house that don't need to be belonging there. Like, nah. So we need to keep the homes of the dragonflies safe and secure because at the end of the day, they also got to be comfortable too. And lastly, educating others because sharing knowledge is one of the most important things in life because sharing knowledge really allows the conversations to happen and the conversations even lead to solutions to some of these issues. How do we solve climate change? How do we save the dragonflies? How do we just make our natural world a better place? And how does we as human beings can contribute to that and also make it a better place for us? Because if the animals are happy, we're happy. If dragonflies are happy, we're happy too. And we're all just going to be happy and live a beautiful life. But of course, that is all we got to say about the dragonflies. It's time to move on to more human issues. We're talking about humans now. And speaking of humans, it's time for gender disparity-ish. Yeah, it's quite a pressing issue, especially in South Africa's logistics sector. Because recently, at the inaugural Skills Summit for Clearing and Forwarding Industry that was held at Empress Palace in Kempton Park. Fun fact, I am from Kempton Park, period. But back to the point. Of course, the Executive Manager of Corporate Affairs at the Transport Education Training Authority, Khatile Nkala, had a lot to say about this issue. Now, she first highlighted some revealing statistics. Number one, women constitute less than 20% of the workforce in the logistics sector, while men dominate 83.3% of representation. Less than 20%, honestly, is insane. In a whole 2025, especially considering how massive the logistics sector is in South Africa, you would expect that there'll be more representation and more opportunities and just more inclusivity. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And it's concerning and something needs to be done about it because what do you mean? For example, if there was 10 people in logistics, only two of them are women, when women are more of the population of South Africa than men? Ha! Like, it doesn't make sense. But not only that, only 1.4% of employees in the industry are individuals with disabilities, indicating a significant gap in inclusive employment. So, yeah, no, it's clearly in logistics, we need more representation for women and people with disabilities, because at the end of the day, everybody want to work in logistics. I mean, not everybody, but, you know, if you're somebody who has a passion for logistics, you want to make a difference within the sector, because at the end of the day, it should be a sector for everybody. But now we're discovering that maybe that's not the case. Maybe that's not the case, because challenges are also happening, as Ngala emphasized, that the sector also struggles to elevate young skilled professionals to leadership positions, because maybe a lot of young talents find themselves confined to clerical positions, making up only 15% of the industry's workforce, with limited opportunities for advancement. And I must say, when you really think about it, I mean, yes, you know, unemployment is a serious issue in South Africa in all industries. But one thing I've also noticed, because when you really think of logistics, a lot of the time you think of more older people, you know, like people who've been in the game and, you know, the older crowd. You barely see like Gen Z. And I want to see Gen Z. Like, I want to see Gen Z at the ports, at our airports, at, you know, the train stations. You know, we want to see them there, and we want to see them making a difference in logistics. When it comes to imports and exports, I want someone my age too to be like, listen, we need to get this cargo out of here stat, you know? So it's quite concerning how the youth is really struggling to progress. Because yes, it's one thing to get into an industry, but you also need to progress in the industry and also now have the opportunity to make a difference and also maybe improve it. Because as you always say, the good thing about having youth in a certain space is that they can make changes and bring forward new ideas that maybe may have not worked in the past. Not saying that, you know, the older generation don't know what they're doing. We appreciate them and we love them and we respect them for their guidance. But also the youth, we got some ideas, and through those ideas, we could really make a difference in logistics. Because listen, it's quite a massive industry in SA. I mean, just open Google Maps, for example, and you'll see how many highways do we have. I mean, props to SANRAL, but like already from that, you can see that, okay, you know, the cargo is moving across the country at a It's moving. Now, what is the path forward? That is the question we need to answer. We can complain, we can highlight things, we can say the stats, but how are we moving forward to fix the problem? Now, to address this, Ngala advocates for, firstly, educational investment by providing bursaries and funding for tertiary education aligned with global standards, emphasizing skills relevant to artificial intelligence and the green economy. Because it all starts with education at the end of the day. It all starts in a university space. So, yes, you can have an inclusive environment, but if there are some financial challenges for many young people to even study logistics, then you got a problem. So I do feel like this is a good way, actually, by having more bursaries, more opportunities, more skill centers to really empower the youth that, hey, if you're interested in logistics, you have everything to go into it and not have any, you know, setbacks. Because at the end of the day, who knows, you could be the next logistics trailblazer. And of course, the second point is strategic collaboration by fostering partnerships between TETA and industry stakeholders to develop qualifications that meet international standards and enhance global competitiveness. Because yes, it does start with education. So let's say, you know, you got your bursary, you got your skills, you've graduated. Now it's time for you to also make impact on a world scale, because we do live in a very competitive world. And logistics is not only really a South African thing. You're dealing with so many other countries as well, and they do things very differently, maybe even more advanced than South Africa. So you want to be able to compete. You want to be able to, you know, also compete with the big dogs, you know? Who knows? You can put SA on the map. Hence why having this international and global awareness within logistical education is quite important, because at the end of the day, the world is advancing. We need to advance, and we need to be on business. And of course, lastly, future-proofing the workforce by adapting to evolving transport environments, by equipping the workforce with skills necessary for emerging technologies and sustainable practices. Heavy on sustainable practices, because at the end of the day, as we said with the dragonflies, is that sustainability is very important. Because yes, you can make an impact. Yes, we can have so many ports, so many highways, so many cargoes going in and out of the airports. But what is that doing for the environment? You know, like, we also need to be environmentally conscious at the end of the day. So hopefully, as the logistics sector grows, that's something that can also be addressed and also improved on. So probably the youth, I have faith in us, the youth, we're going to really push that narrative forward. Because if we don't, then, hey, climate change is going to get the better of us. And we don't want that. We don't want that. But what's interesting to know is that the clearing and forwarding sector is projected to grow by 6.4% over the next 5 years. So that's a good sign. It's such a good sign. I mean, 6.4, it's a stat. It's a very big number if you really think about it, especially in 5 years. 5 years goes past fast. So to see that the industry is growing, hopefully through that growth, we can have more opportunities for the unrepresented and for the youth and for everybody who's just interested in some logistics. And speaking of sustainability, as we mentioned, because the dragonflies need to be maintained, because at the end of the day, we need to care for the environment. Logistics also needs to practice sustainability, because without that, they were just causing more damage. And now, unfortunately, or fortunately, they're getting sued. They are getting sued in Paris. Now, on June 5th, 2025, TotalEnergy stood in trial over allegations of misleading climate-related advertising, a practice commonly referred to as greenwashing. Hey, greenwashing, like, when you look at the term, it's like, you can already see it's quite controversial, because it's basically when a company says, we're saving the environment by doing certain things, and they're actually not doing that. They're lying, and we don't like lying. So the fact that TotalEnergy is being accused of such is concerning. It's concerning. Especially, it's also interesting how this marks the first instance in France where a major fossil fuel company faces such charges. So it's quite a controversy. Now, let's look at the accusatories. Who is accusing TotalEnergy? Now, the lawsuit initiated in March 2022 by environmental organizations Greenpeace France, Friends of the Earth France, and Notre Affaire à tous, and they're accusing TotalEnergy of misleading commercial practices. The core contention is that the company's claims of achieving carbon neutrality by 2050 are incompatible with its ongoing investment in oil and gas production. Ooh. They clocked TotalEnergy's tea, because they're saying basically, like, listen, you want to have carbon neutrality in 2050, but why are you still messing around with oil and gas? And we all know that when you mess around with oil and gas, its impact on the environment, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. Specifically, Apolline Cagnet, which is the legal director at Greenpeace France, she emphasizes that the potential impact of the case, stating that a ruling against TotalEnergy could have major implications for how companies communicate their climate pledges. Because if TotalEnergy can get called out and sued, nobody's safe. Nobody's safe. But TotalEnergy is saying, listen, they're clapping back. They're not taking this lying down. They are refuting these allegations, asserting that its role in energy transition is grounded in objective, verifiable data. The company maintains that its strategies align with global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They're literally saying that, listen, check the stats. That's what we're doing. So why y'all complaining? Why y'all complaining? You'll see by 2050 that carbon neutrality will be achieved. Will it? Will it not? I feel like that's what makes this case so interesting, because at the end of the day, we want to know, are you really doing what you claim that you're going to do? Which is, you know, achieving carbon neutrality and, you know, alleviating the impacts of climate change on our world. So, it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting because it's also part of a global trend where a lot of environmental groups are leveraging legal avenues to challenge corporate greenwashing. Notably, two airlines, KLM. If you haven't heard of KLM, KLM is a global airline based in Amsterdam in Netherlands, and they fly to basically most all of the continents, including Africa, and Lufthansa, which is also another German airline based in Frankfurt, Germany, and also fly around the world, like seven, all the continents, essentially. So they're also getting sued. They're like, your planes, those planes that are going all around the world, they are doing things to the environment, and you're also having claims of misleading environmental impact. So first, it's Total Energies, now it's KLM, and as well, Lufthansa, like, they're not playing. And I think that's the energy we need, because we don't want corporations to, like, claim they're making impact when they're not. Because then you're actually causing more damage at the end of the day. Because, you know, what we all want as a society is to make the world a better place, alleviate climate change. So now you're doing messy stuff. Just because you're a corporation, just because you got money, just because you got power and influence, doesn't mean anything. If you are damaging the environment, you will be called out. So I feel like this is a message to any other corporation, whether in South Africa or in the whole entire world. If you do not do as you claim to do, which is, you know, save the environment, you're going to get sued. And it's not going to be pretty, because we'll look at you like, what were you doing, Vele? So you don't want to be in such a situation, because it's going to be messy and you're going to be held accountable as you should. Now it is time to have some little science fun facts, because, listen, it's so interesting to hear these fun facts and learn something new about the human body or just anything within STEM, because at the end of the day, we love growing our knowledge. And also, some of these facts you can use in a conversation, whether you're speaking to a friend, an acquaintance, your situationship, whoever, you know, you can just look more educated, because it's always nice. It's always nice to learn new things. Now, of course, the first science fact is the human stomach can dissolve razor blades. Oh, that's intense. Razor blades. That's intense, and I feel like that's actually, firstly, it shows how strong the human body can be, because razor blades are made of metal, whether stainless steel or a different type of metal, but they're made of metal. So the fact that we can swallow a metal and it can dissolve, like, it don't make no sense. It doesn't make no sense. Now, acids are ranked on a scale from 0 to 14. The lower the pH level, the stronger the acid. So if it's around 0 to 4, then it's quite strong. That's an acid. But if it's like 10 to 14, it's quite weak. So the human stomach's acid is typically rated at 1.0 to 2.0. So it's really strong. It's quite strong. It can dissolve anything, basically. Although, I will say, that doesn't mean it gives us the excuse as humans to swallow anything, because let's be safe. I do feel like, in as much as our acids can be strong, let's not, you know, test them now. Like, let's just keep it at food and, you know, nutritious things that really enrich our bodies, as they say. Now, the second science fact is one letter doesn't exist in the periodic table. Now, if you did physics back in high school, or natural science, you know, in the early days, maybe even life science, maybe I don't remember the periodic table being involved in what you might call it, life science. But who knows? Maybe Gen Alpha, it's for them now. We love evolution, we love growth. But one letter is not included in the periodic table. And it's crazy because there are so many letters and there's so much on the periodic table. So to think that they left one letter out, I'm wondering, is this intentional? Do they have beef with this letter? Or is it like, it was just an accident? Especially because it's the most random letter. It's quite a commonish letter. And it's the letter J, which is like, listen, I would understand, no shade to other letters, because I do feel like, in as much as every letter in the alphabet is important and is vital, But some letters are not used as often, especially like Z or Y or X or like Q. Like, you don't really see those much, especially in the English language. In other languages, it's a whole nother conversation. But specifically in the English language, you're not really using the letter X every day. But, you know, in English, other languages, it's a different thing. So the fact that the letter J, which is quite common, was left out is interesting. So I'm hoping that one day the letter J can be used because, hey, we're still young. We're still young as a society. I mean, we've only lived for like 2,000 years. But as a human population, there's still so many years for us to go. So we're still going to discover more gases, more solids, more liquids. And hopefully one day they can be lettered with the letter J. That'll be interesting to see, honestly. Like, I'll be excited. The day that they discover that, hopefully I'll still be alive. Who knows? But when they discover that, they should invite me. So I can be like, period. We see this. This is new. What's going on? Like, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting. But this leads us to our science word of the day, where we find out how science terms can actually be used in everyday language. Because, hey, you may think it's specific to, like, it's jargon for a certain career. But meantime, you can use it in everyday speech. And it's like, oh, okay, like, period. Because we love expanding our vocabulary. And the science word for today is oscillation. Now, what exactly is oscillation? Now, in physics, oscillation refers to a regular change in strength or direction in a wave or electrical current. But it can also be used in, like, colloquial language as repeated movement from one position to another. So, for example, it can be used, like, let's say you're arguing with somebody and, you know, you guys are just going back and forth, there's no solution. You can actually say, ish, I feel like we're oscillating right now, like, we're just not getting anywhere, we're just going back and forth, like, do you see the oscillation? Like, literally, you could use that and they'll be like, oscillation, like, okay, like, we see you pulling up big words, like, you know. So I do feel like it's such an interesting term, and the fact that it can coexist between physics and the English language is so cool. So I hope that you use that in your everyday lingo, because ironically, I actually discovered the word when I was reading an article for my research, and I just saw they just said the oscillation between these two concepts, and I was like, what does that mean? So I googled it and I saw that, oh, This could be used as a nice word to use in everyday language or even in your essay. I mean, I feel like that's a good word to use in your essay. So use that in your essay too. And who knows, maybe it might improve your mark. Hopefully so. But unfortunately, we've reached the end of Science Package. But we've learned a lot. We've had such an enriching conversation. In the beginning, we spoke about the importance of dragonflies and how they are really essential for our freshwater biomes. Biomes, right? Yes, it's biomes. For our freshwater biomes and just life in general. And then, of course, we spoke about gender disparity within the South African logistics sector. And listen, it needs to improve. I want to see more women. I want more representation for people with disabilities. And I want more youth representation. Because once we get that, we're moving places. We are going far. Because I have faith in the logistics sector because it's very massive. Especially in South Africa. We got a lot of highways, airports, ports. We got the strength to really change the world. And then, of course, we moved into the court where we discussed that, hey, Total Energies is getting sued because they're having accusations of greenwashing. Are they greenwashing? Are they not? But the broader conversation just highlights how companies should not greenwash. If you say that you're going to change the environment and save climate change, well, not save climate change, but more so decrease the effects of climate change, then you need to stand on business and do that. Do not lie. I mean, I wouldn't say be truthful and be like, yeah, no, we're destroying the planet, because that's problematic. Because why are you destroying the planet? Like, come on now, don't do that. So, but also don't greenwash. So what you need to do is save the planet. I feel like that's the conclusion. Save the planet. And we learned a lot from our fun facts and the word of the day, because at the end of the day, sometimes in life, you just feel like you're oscillating. You're just going back and forth and back and forth like an electrical wave. And it's like, what's going on? What's going on? But of course, you can get back and forth with us here at Madiba's Radio Podcast. So interact with us, engage with us, and on all our social media platforms. Listen, we love to hear what you got to say. So keep in contact with us. That's the only oscillation that I like, that we like. I mean, our oscillation is great too, but you know, we love that oscillation specifically the most. But as for me, my name is Tsuo Kendlovu. Same time, same place. Bye.
Opening up the waves for you to be heard.